You're listening to the Fooled by the Root podcast.
Hello, this is your host, Heidi Marble. I'm looking forward to sharing this Pulled by the Root episode that I did with Vin the adoptee. Vin was adopted from an orphanage in India and was raised in Australia. And my goodness, does he have a tale to tell. The things that this human being has been through and overcome are simply astonishing. In this episode, we do discuss suicide, we do discuss sexual orientation, and Vin also gets into his deep pain that he felt when he first came into the adoption community and what he learned from that experience. It was really interesting to be able to hear his perspective and be able to absorb the experience that he had. Vin is honest, he is hopeful, and he is using his voice in powerful and meaningful ways. Hello, everyone. This is your host, Heidi Marble. I am beyond excited to have Vin back again. Yes, one more time. We did not release his first interview. After a lot of debate going back and forth, Vin and I decided that it would be really powerful for him to share his story of survivorship. And so there are other interviews out there that really get into the details of his story. But he's in a really good place, and he wants to share that. He's also up in the middle of the night. He is nocturnal, so I am so grateful he's joining us from Australia at something like 2:30 a.m. in the morning. Before you jump in, Vin, I love this so much. When I have people submit for the podcast, they give me a bio, and on your bio, you said, "I'm Vin." And I love that so much. But Ben, you're much more than two words. And also in your words, you said that you're a human rights advocate and a professional photographer. And I know that's just a very small amount of the things that you are, but at least we can start with that. So welcome, Ben. Yes, just we want to sit back and listen.
Thank you so much, Heidi, for having me. I'm just overwhelmed with just how wonderful you are, and all your followers are just amazing as well, and it's an honor to be invited to be interviewed by you. So thank you so much. And thank you for letting me reassess and tell a different narrative, that I've moved away from the original narrative of when I spoke about my story and my journey with other podcasters and other people and the community as well, because, you know, as people, we all evolve. And I feel like this time in my life, I've evolved from when we did the first interview back in April. So much has changed since then. So it's just amazing, you know, and to be able to have that opportunity to redo over, I suppose, and tell a different narrative, a more positive one. But I want to talk about the surviving those challenges. So for some of you who don't know who I am, I'm Vin. I was born in India in 1986 in the city of Patna in northeast of India in the state of Bihar. I was given up for adoption when I was 10 days old. I spent 10 months in the orphanage, and then I was adopted out to Australia and grew up in an Australian Dutch family. I grew up with three older siblings who were all biological to my adoptive parents. So before I go any further, I would like to read you all something from my book that I'm writing, and it's quite in depth. So I will give a trigger warning because it does talk about suicide. So here it goes. As I look up into the night sky, all I saw was black. Most nights when I look up, I see the stars shining so brightly, but tonight all I saw was black. As I looked down from the sky, it went in slow motion. As my eyes caught the top of my swing, I could imagine a rope with a noose hanging from it, and I could see myself freely hanging, dangling in midair. Tears started to fill my eyes and slowly roll down my face, and I didn't even know why. It hasn't been that long since I last thought of ending at all. I can be so paranoid about trusting anyone. I don't even think I trust myself sometimes. I wake up from nightmares all the time and I don't even want to sleep these days because the nightmares just seem so real. Every time I close my eyes, I wish I would never wake up. Sometimes I pray I won't wake up because then I won't have to deal with the people lying to me or making me think there's nothing going on when I know that it's all bullshit. Life is bullshit. I so badly just want to end my life. The thoughts of my life getting any better is so bleak and minute. Even the thought of that makes me want to kill myself sometimes. So this is the intro to the book, the story, the journey of my life, because, and the reason why I started so, I suppose, on a low note is to sort of set the narrative of my life, because my life has been anything but fantastic. Just like everyone else, we all have our own struggles. And in all my other interviews, as you said before, Heidi, I've spoken a lot about my troubles and my complex traumas. So in this interview, I'd love to talk about how I survived those challenges I faced. So I want to tell you about my 500 days. So that started on September 4th in 2019. It was after I had gotten bullied from the adoption community and my name and face was dragged through the mud because I was putting out a positive light in the adoption community. And there are a lot of people who still suffer with a lot of traumas and complexities that come with that. And I did come into the adoption community very naive and very very unfiltered. I didn't have many filters at all. And as a result of that, I was bullied quite extensively. And that took quite a while to overcome that. And I ended up in hospital and I tried to take my own life because of that. And after a few months, I was still struggling with that quite a bit because I felt betrayed by a community that I thought I fit into because I'd never fit into any other community in my life. And I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere really. So there was that sense of isolation. And when I came into the adoption community, all of a sudden I wasn't alone anymore. And then that happened and I was alone and isolated again. And on September 4th, I thought about suicide and I was so determined that night. And I remember I was in such a dark place and I snapped myself out of it and I said, right, don't do it tonight. Give myself 500 days. So at the end of the 500 days, if I hadn't changed my life, I was going to commit suicide. So my 500 days started on September 4th in 2019. And I made a promise to myself that within those 500 days, I couldn't say no to things. I had to get out of my comfort zone and say yes to things that I didn't want to do because this was my chance to change my life. And if I really wanted to change my life, you can't stay in your comfort zone. So I said yes to everything. That was my number one rule within the 500 days, because we all know that if you just stay the same or don't even try and change your mindset, then you're not going to change. So that was my golden rule, to try and do things that I would never even consider doing, because I wanted to change my life. I wanted to change this feeling that I was feeling. I didn't want to die, but I felt like I had no option or no purpose. So I tried to make my own purpose. So this 500 days was my purpose. It was the last 500 days of my life. And I just had to do something. So the first week of the 500 days, I got a call from my teacher. I had done a community services, a certificate 3 in community services. And my teacher and I, we became really close, and he was such a great mentor. And he called me up out of the blue and just said, I'd finished the course. It'd been a couple of months since I'd finished the course. And he called me up out of the blue and said, hey, Vin, you know, you're a really great advocate in what himself and another adoptee was looking for a third member to start a men's support walking group. And because I had my golden rule of not saying no to anything, I said, yep, sure, bring it on. Let's do it. So we created this, and it was fantastic. And I started to feel positive. And that was within the first week. And then the second week, I started the Diploma of Community Services, and I met friends there, and it was amazing. And so a couple of weeks into it, on the week of October 14th, it was a tough week for me. I was almost ready to give up. In the space of a week, I had gotten beaten up and robbed twice. My dad went into hospital and we almost lost him. I had a car accident and I broke up with my partner of 10 years. So that was a very big week for me. And I really was ready to give up. And I went to the walking group on the Thursday, and that week, that walking group saved my life, because I was with a bunch of guys that were compassionate and had a lot of empathy and showed how someone could sit there and listen and be helpful and show courage. And that's what they showed me. They showed courage. And in return, I felt like I had the courage to continue. It wasn't much, but I felt like I had just enough courage to continue. On day 119, I started helping out with the Australian bushfires, and which gave me more confidence, and I was able to spend time with people of the community, and I had met so many wonderful people, and out of that I made a great friend who became a part of my chosen family. And my dear friend and her family embraced me and with all of my weirdness, and accepted me for who I am without judgment at all. It gave me a sense of being accepted within a family, which is something I struggle with a lot within my own family sometimes. So it was refreshing to have that, to be able to be in a family setting without being judged and just being accepted wholly. And I'm so thankful that out of, you know, doing all these wonderful things with helping the community, that I was able to take something from, well, I took a lot from that, but being able to take a true friend, who I was able to have a part of my chosen family, was just absolutely wonderful, wonderful, absolutely wonderful. So I survived my 500 days. You know, there were a lot of things that happened within those 500 days, but I got to the end of the 500 days, and in the end, instead of being about committing suicide, the narrative of my 500 days changed as well. I did a video each week of those 500 days, and each week it got more positive and positive. And so when I got to the end of the 500 days, I decided to change the narrative of the original, I'm going to kill myself at the end of the 500 days. And I've turned it into a documentary of how your life can change in 500 days and how you can survive 500 days and change your life completely around. But I do want to add in that on the 600th day, something that I wasn't expecting at all and didn't realize it was on the 600th day until I worked out the maths, was that it was the day that I met my person, my soulmate, and the person that I want to spend the rest of my life with. That was the day that we met. on my 600th day since the original 500 days started. And it didn't take long to fall in love with him at all. And there's so much I love about him, and I'd be here forever if I told you all the wonderful things about him. But what I can say is that he is the person that I want to spend the rest of my life with. And if I wasn't able to grow and change within those 500 days, I wouldn't have met him, and I wouldn't have been the person that I am today, because even in such a short amount of time, you can change your life, and something so wonderful can come along and just change your complete perspective of life. And, you know, it's been 686 days since my 500 days, and I've never been so liberated and so positive, and my outlook on life has never been so positive. So that was one of the reasons why I wanted to redo this, because I had just spent the last 686 days changing my narrative. And although my life has been complex trauma upon complex trauma, there's also light at the end of the tunnel. And sometimes you can be so deep in and into that darkness that you can't see a way out. However, if you hang on just for a little bit longer and give yourself a sense of purpose, there is purpose, and you will find purpose. And life is all about, I'm a very big believer in life is all about choice, perspective, accountability, respect, courage, and love. And, you know, and I'll talk about each of those things, because it's amazing at how those things can change your entire life and entire being and purpose, I suppose. So, you know, people that have heard me talk about my traumas, just to give you a brief, because I don't want to dive in too much to it, but just, I suppose, a brief, quick version of my life story. So I was, when I was in the orphanage, I was, all the babies in the orphanage were given drugs to be put to sleep at night, and men came into the orphanage and raped the babies. And when I came out to Australia, I had some sexually transmitted diseases, and out of that, because of the chemical imbalances that the drugs had on my system, I came out with an acquired brain injury. Then moving forward to when I started high school, I was a month into high school, I was sexually abused, and that continued for the duration of my time at high school. So for 2.5 years, I was sexually abused by a boy at high school, and I was gang raped by 4 boys at school camp. But it wasn't just the sexual abuse, it was also being bashed with metal bars and being thrown into a middle circle where boys were surrounding me and spitting on me and peeing on me and kicking me and punching me. And it was brutal. There are no horrible words to describe it, because the most horrible word wouldn't even be enough to describe that. And how I survived that was just, I can go into that a bit later, but it was brutal. And then I left high school. Well, I was asked to leave by the school, and I went into a 6-month psychiatric facility that helped troubled teens regain their strength and regain their, I suppose, sanity back. And once I finished that, I tried to go back to school, and but it wasn't a stereotypical school. It was I'm not quite sure what you call it in America, but we call it a TAFE, so like a community college. And I met a girl, I fell in love, ran away from home. And for the next 11 to 16 months, that time in my life was worse than high school. It made high school seem easy. And that was, there were things that I had done and seen and was a part of that will haunt me forever. And I also became a very young father as well. And then once I got out of that period of my life, there was a lot of times of uncertainty, and I also realized that I was gay. And that was a struggle in itself because I hated that. I struggled with that quite a lot because whenever I thought about guys, it reminded me of high school, and I hated myself for that. And I blamed the boys at school for making me gay because I didn't want to be gay because it just reminded me of high school. And I struggled with that, and I tried to commit suicide quite a few times. And during high school and during that time that I had run away from home, I tried to commit suicide quite a few times because there was just, I didn't want to live anymore because it was just so horrible of all the things that I had seen and been through. So coming out as gay was just another cherry on the cake, you know. It was just another thing that I hated about myself, and I told my parents that I was gay, and my parents were not surprised.
Yeah, sometimes parents have it all figured out before we do.
They do. I wish sometimes they would just turn to their children and say, hey, heads up, we know. But I was very thankful that my mum and my family were very accepting of me, and my extended family were very accepting of me. But there was still struggle, and I still dated girls, and I still tried. I still struggled with the idea of being gay because of high school, and the thought of consensually being with a guy made me sick, and because it just brought back memories of high school. And so I was dealing with that, and after I had come back from that time living away from home, I moved back into my parents, and they were very strict, and I had seen a lot of life. So it was hard to fall back into being the child, because the things that I had seen, even adults don't see. And that was very difficult for me. So I couch surfed at friends' houses for the next, you know, 6 months until I found shared accommodation. And I lived in and out of shared accommodation for quite a few years. And then I met a guy, and it was my first real gay relationship, and it had its challenges. But I moved back with my parents, but this time it was next door to them. For the next 10 years, I had my mental breakdowns. I was also in a gay relationship, and combined they had their challenges, because it was for the first time in my life I was able to process all the trauma that I had been through, and that took its toll, not just on me but everyone else around me, because I was having panic attacks all the time, and I was hearing voices in my head from when I was at high school, and over the years that just got worse and worse. So it was the first time that I was able to have a stable home, I suppose, to process all those things. And that must have been very hard for my parents to see me go through that. My parents were there for me, and I was thankful for that, because, you know, they were just across the paddock. And, you know, being living on your own as well, I mean, even though I was next door to them, but living in a house on your own, I had been in shared accommodation, so it was, that was different for me, living on my own. Again, even though I had mum and dad just across the paddock, I was fully independent and, you know, living on my own. And I struggle a lot with isolation, and I struggle every day with depression. So going through processing those traumas was quite difficult. I didn't have a stable counsellor. Counsellors never understood my complex trauma. And it was very difficult to open up to a counsellor, because I would always get passed on to the next counsellor because I had too many traumas, or they weren't specific in that area of trauma, or, you know, and then when I'd throw out the word adoption, they'd be like, oh, okay, so I'm not really equipped to deal with this, so maybe it's best if you find another counsellor, because adoption and trauma are very complex, and I'm not really, you know, up to scratch with how to help you. So it was just being passed on from counsellor to counsellor, and it was just, it was so frustrating. And being in a relationship was very difficult, because I can be a very hard person to love, and with the traumas that come with adoption, with attachment disorder and trust issues and questioning every freaking thing. And jealousy can also be a big one for me as well. You know, that just comes with trust issues. Again, the relationship was very difficult. There was a lot of I suppose you could say a lot of mental abuse. However, I'm not exactly innocent in that as well, and that's a part of taking accountability. You know, you can't just blame other people for your issues. There comes a point when you have to take accountability and say, okay, there were some things that they did wrong, but take a step back and look at the things you did wrong to contribute to that, and see where you went wrong, and see where you could have helped the situation. And it took me the whole 10 years of the relationship to, and it wasn't until I came into the adoption community that I realized that I had to take accountability. And one of the things that I realized when I went through that stage of being bullied by the adoption community, some of the adoption community, a large portion of the adoption community, was that they always say never read the hate comments. And I read them. I read every single one of them. And that was a very big learning curve for me, because I was able to departmentalize the bad comments and the horrible, stupid, pointless comments that horrible, horrible, nasty people said, and take the good out of those comments. There weren't a lot of good. However, I'm lucky that I can translate bad into good because I've had so much bad in my life. Out of every bad situation, there is positive if you look hard enough. And even though all of the complex traumas that I've gone through, there were good that came out of things. And I'm not saying that they should have happened. However, it's that old saying, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that's true to some degree. And it is very cliche. However, it does have its purpose because it does make you stronger. And going through what I went through made me a stronger person. But going through what I went through within the adoption community, that was life-altering. It was horrible, and I don't wish anyone to go through that. And I wish that the adoption community didn't do that to other adoptees, because it strips away all of the things that you thought you found within the adoption community, and it makes you second guess your identity. It makes you second guess who you are. It was horrible and brutal. However, the lessons that I took from that, sadly to say, that was the only way that I was able to learn those lessons. And I was able to take those horrible comments and turn them into a positive, and I took accountability. So there were things that people pointed out to me that I needed to improve on, and I needed to educate myself, and I needed to put myself in other people's perspective and understand their side of things and understand the other people's traumas. And I needed to have an open mind, and instead of saying, no, don't attack me because I had a happy adoption, I allowed myself to then listen to the angry voices and the pain of people. And in a lot of senses, it made me take another look at my life and my family and my story. And it helped me reevaluate the things that I wasn't aware of. So it was a huge, huge learning curve. And I am thankful for the lessons that I was taught out of that. However, again, I do not wish that upon anyone, what I went through. And it's really difficult because the adoption community can be complex. It is complex because there are so many adoptees around the world, and every single person on this planet, whether you're adopted or not, has their own story. And when I came into the adoption community, I had the label "in the fog" slapped on me. And that always annoyed me. I always hate that term, because who determines where you are in the fog? Who determines that you are in the fog? Just because you aren't aware of some things, other people get to judge you and say, well, you don't know about that, so you must be in the fog. You haven't seen that yet. But what if those things that other adoptees are talking about, what if you never go through that? You know, you are in control of your own narrative, and the adoptees that label you in the fog, they take that control away from you and they judge you from their perspective. They don't know you and they don't know what you've been through. And because I'm very open about my traumas, that was used against me, and people used my past against me. And another lesson that that was taught to me through this was that all those hateful comments, I took them and I used them as armor. I put them on my body and said, this is now my armor. You can never use this against me again. And I took control of my own narrative and I stopped being victim to myself and my life and my traumas, because life is all about perspective. You know, it's that old saying, two people can look at the same tree and see two completely different things. And that is so true, because a lot of adoptees talked about me being in the fog because I wasn't aware of certain things, and they thought that my traumas came from my adoption. I have trauma from my adoption. However, 90% of my traumas were from high school and were from being bullied and were from the time that I ran away. That was 90% of my traumas. The other 10% was my adoption trauma. And a lot of adoptees would convince me or try to convince me that that 90% of my traumas were related to adoption somehow. No, they weren't, because my biological family didn't bully me and rape me and beat me. My adoptive family didn't do that. It was the boys from high school that did that. It was the people, adults, that did that to me. You know, so no, it wasn't my adoption traumas. How I reacted to all of those complex traumas was part of my adoption trauma. Mm-hmm. And that's what I had to make the distinction between. And having that happen to me within the adoption community helped me make that distinction. And it really put my life into perspective, and it stopped me being the victim. The adoptees that have so much trauma, and again, labels, but there is a term for the adoptees that go around and bully people, and that's the angry adoptees. And there's an army of them. They helped me stop being a victim. And I'm probably an unpopular opinion, however, I'm going to say it anyway. Those angry adoptees are still the victims. And in my opinion, coming out of that and being on the other side of that, I was able to take accountability, to change my perspective, to change my narrative. Doesn't mean that I've forgotten about my traumas. It doesn't mean that I'm all better now because I'm aware. It just means that I have a different perspective, and I was able to change my perspective and change my narrative and stop being victim to myself. And I think that's one of the hardest things to do and realize as a human being. And in some senses, it does make life easier because it does give you a different perspective. And it gave me a different perspective with my family as well. And I was able to realize some very sad truths about the way I was treated in my family. And although I love my adoptive family, just like any family, all children have issues with their parents at some point in time of their life. And I think it would be quite abnormal if you didn't have issues with your family, you know, whether you were biological or not. And I always maintain this, is that what adoptees go through aren't just specific to adoptees. Any child or any person on this planet can go through the same things as adoptees go through. Yes, the primal wound is a whole different aspect of it, and non-adoptive people don't have that primal wound, you know. So that is something that is, you know, I suppose, specific to adoptees. or children who have lost their parents at a very early age, or been taken away from their parents, or, you know, in those terms. But it did help me realise and understand that there are some issues in my family. And although I love my adoptive family and I love them, you know, there's no question about that. There are just some things that the adoption community pointed out to me, I should say, that I denied before. And my mum and I have had many conversations about this, and there are things that I suppose my parents do that I do question, and I have been able to be open and have a conversation with my parents about certain things. And that doesn't always work. You know, it's you can be open and honest as much as you want, but if people aren't willing to change, then it doesn't solve anything. It doesn't fix anything. And I think that's another key in life, is you have to be willing to change. If there's something wrong and someone points it out to you and you don't change, then that's where the issue lies. And that can be really difficult, because it was a sad moment that I realised that sometimes some people can't change and they don't have the capability of change. And when I have taken the time to heal and move past the person I once was, and it's been 17 years since I was that person, and I've healed so much, I still get treated like I was that person 17 years ago. And one of the things that I say all the time is, your actions have to match your words, because sometimes people will say things and then do the opposite. And I struggle with that within certain aspects of my life. And I remind people that if your actions don't match your words, then what's the point on saying it? Because you have to be honest and open, and sometimes you got to prove that if you want change, that has to, you have to give and take. And I try and take the approach of, if someone says something to me that I need to work on within myself, I will take the time to work on that, and I will do everything within my power to make that change. But if I was to point out something that they were doing that I felt like I was being mistreated by, and they didn't make the effort to change, then why am I making the effort to change for you if you're not going to make the effort to change for me? So, you know, there are a lot of things that that I've learned in the past 17 years. And I do also say that, you know, although I am my parents' child, I'll always be their child, but I am not a child anymore. And that's one of the biggest things that I think parents struggle with. I'm not saying that you can't be a victim, because when something horrible happens to you, you are a victim. What I'm trying to say is, put a time limit on that. Because if you don't, the only person that's going to suffer from that is you. People move on. People who have done the wrongdoing to you move on. They might do it to someone else, or they might wake up and go, oh shit, I've treated this person like shit and you'll get an apology. Sometimes you won't get an apology. However, if you stay in that mindset, you are the person that's going to lose.
And very good point, Ben.
That is what I was doing. I was losing me because I was falling victim and staying victim to my past. You are not your past. You have the capability of change. You just got to do it. And that's what I struggled with the most was I hate change. Every freaking person on this planet hates change. However, change makes you a better person. But you make the choice to become the better person because it's a choice. And as I said at the start, you know, life is all about choice, perspective, accountability, respect, courage, and love. To make a choice takes courage. To love takes courage. To change your perspective takes courage. Respect and respecting others takes courage. But, you know, it's respect should be a given. However, it's not always. There are horrible people in the world, and the world is a cruel place, and you need to navigate your way through that cruel place because you're not given a manual to life, and we're just thrown in the deep end. And when you add in adoption, wow, bloody hell, that really turns your world upside down, and you're stripped away from every identity that you ever had, and you're not even sure if you'll ever figure out an identity. But we are more than our labels. We are more than, or I am more than being gay, being adopted, being artistic, you know, being my past, being my complex traumas, you know. I am more than all those labels. Every single person is more than their labels. And I think it's ironic that it's very widely known in the adoption community that everyone hates labels, yet the quickest label they put on you is in the fog because you're not aware of this or that. Or, and there is a lot of bullying in the adoption community, and it makes me sick that people, other adoptees, can be so cruel to other adoptees because they've experienced the same or similar traumas, yet they can still be so horrible. And it makes me really sad to my core that in a community where we're meant to feel safe and vulnerable with each other is where other adoptees use that vulnerability against other adoptees. And that makes me really sad. And no one really calls that out. And I think it's bullshit that no one ever calls it out. It's always swept under the rug, or people don't like people that stand on their own. People like to follow a crowd. And when you stand on your own, apart from everyone else, you have a harder road. But standing on your own, it takes courage. And I like to stand on my own and not follow a crowd, because following a crowd, just that's the easy way. Standing on your own is a much harder way. However, it makes you a better person and it makes you a kind person. But that's a choice. To be kind is a choice. Everything in life is a choice. But again, it's all about courage and perspective and accountability and love, you know.
Oh, Ben, and we're getting close to our time. We have about 10 minutes, and I would just love for you to really speak to the adoptees that are in pain, that are, you know, have been at that moment where they looked up at the sky and it was black. There were no stars in their sky. And, you know, I know you spoke to that quite a bit, but I wonder if we could just swing back to it. There's a couple of things that were really powerful to me about you as well. You know, you talked about how much you love music and singing, and your mom would notice that your singing would just die out. I want adoptees to be able to sing, you know?
Yeah.
And the anger that they feel is justified, but you're absolutely right. We should not be turning against each other. We have a beautiful opportunity as a global community to create a space of safety and acceptance, no matter if you're in denial or whatever you want to call it.
You know, all my life, I was fake because I felt like I had to be a chameleon and fit in wherever I had to. It was a survival skill, and I've lived in survival mode all my life. And, you know, I've stopped living in survival mode. I have it there handy if I need it.
It's a nice thing to have.
It is a nice thing to have, but I've stopped living in survival mode. And I know other adoptees feel isolated and depressed, and that just comes with the territory of not knowing identity and being scared in the world and feeling like you have no one to talk to or turn to, or feeling like the whole world is against you. But just know that there are people out there that are there for you, that can listen to you, that can give you a voice. And just because someone hasn't been through the same situation as you doesn't mean that their story is not worth telling, because every story is worth telling, and every single person on this planet has a voice and has a story. And sometimes it might take you a little longer than others to find your voice. And that's okay, because when you eventually do, you'll inspire others, and you will hopefully be the light for other adoptees or other people. And it's scary finding that light, but I made a quote, and I can't remember word for word because it was a couple of years ago that I did it, but I think it went along the lines of, when you're in that dark tunnel and you're searching for the light and you can't find any, and you finally see a light, that's what adoptees are struggling with, is they're struggling with the darkness. So instead of being angry at them, be a light in their tunnel and help them find their way out to the other side. And I think it's all about being understanding and showing empathy and being compassionate and kind, because one of the biggest things I've noticed since this pandemic has started is the world has shown the most ugliest side to it. And it makes me really sad, because people are scared. People are afraid. They don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know what's going to happen. And it makes me afraid. However, instead of choosing to be afraid publicly, I've chosen love and kindness, because at the end of the day, love and kindness are the things that are gonna get you somewhere and show you the light. And it's love and kindness that gives you courage and strength to help others. And when you're feeling weak, that's not a bad thing. It just says that you're tired, and it's okay to be tired. Have a rest and then start again tomorrow.
Oh, Ben, this has been incredible, Ben. Oh, my gosh. I think we just need to talk every week.
That would be awesome.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I just want to thank you so much for the gift of your presence. I am so happy that you are 600 and however many days past. And I hope that there will be thousands and thousands more of those days, and that they will be filled with more and more strength and peace. Then you are indeed a light in the darkness, and I'm grateful to you.
Thank you so much. I'm just so excited to be connected with you and just gifted with your friendship and love. And I'm thank you so much for everything that you do in the adoption community, because every voice in the adoption community is just a voice of strength, no matter what perspective you come from. And, you know, every voice needs to be heard and every story needs to be told, and no voice should be silenced. You know, everyone has a voice, and it's important to hear everyone's voice. So thank you for allowing and giving people a platform for their voice to be heard. You're just amazing. So thank you.
Oh, Ben, thank you so much.